information you need. The podcast you love. This is the PatrickWiscombe.com Podcast Network. Fueling your business success. This is the Entrepreneur Addiction Podcast, breaking the small business loan news you need. If you obsess about your company, heard exclusively on Lendio.com. And now, here are your hosts, Brock Blake, Dan Bischoff, and Patrick Wiscombe.
This podcast is sponsored by Lendio.com, the online source you need to find the right business financing to grow your company. So check them out, Lendio.com, L-E-N-D-I-O, Lendio.com, to get your business growing right now. It's the Entrepreneur Addiction Podcast. My name is Patrick Wiscombe. Thank you, as always, for tuning us in and taking us along wherever and however you're accessing the podcast, whether it be on lendio.com/blog, or you can pick it up on my website, patrickwiscombe.com. We've been having a streak of podcasts where the guests have just been fantastic, and this week is going to be no different. And I realize you're supposed to say that as a radio host, but we really do have a terrific guest all the way from San Diego. Before we bring her in, let me introduce the VP of Marketing at Lendio.com. It's Burke Alder. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. It's a great, beautiful day here in Utah. Blue skies, you know, the 4th of July tomorrow, so life is good.
And hot.
Hot.
Man, dude, it is. I know that we have a dry heat here. I'll take dry heat over humid heat any day. Let's bring in all the way from California, San Diego. La Jolla is the author of The Outstanding Organization: Generate Business Results by Eliminating Chaos and Building the Foundation for Everyday Excellence. Karen Martin in San Diego. How are you this morning?
Hi, Patrick and Burke. Nice to see you. Nice to be talking with you. Doing well. A little foggy here today, but I'll take fog over that heat that the Midwest and the East Coast are experiencing.
I love San Diego. Before we started recording, I told you that we were down in San Diego, La Jolla specifically, La Jolla Beach. Oh, man, your little corner of the world. If I had to transplant myself from Salt Lake to anywhere in the world, San Diego would be on my top five for sure.
It's a pretty special place. Nice place to live.
Let's get right into this book. It's called The Outstanding Organization. And you have a pretty hefty endorsement, the author of The Toyota Way. And let's just get a little bit of background on you. As I was reading the cover, you've been doing this for 20 years, basically improving operations. And you are the main consultant for Karen Martin & Associates, LLC. How did you become such a business, what's the right word?
Scientist of organizational behavior and success.
How did you do that?
Yeah, well, the scientist part of it is actually kind of interesting. I have my undergrad degrees in microbiology, which is a far cry from where I am today.
That's true.
Don't worry about your major. Just go and learn how to think and research.
That's there
all
we go.
For. I actually started out building and managing operations and was always intrigued with how difficult it was to have a well-run operation. And then I left my internal roles in 1993 to start my consulting practice to help others build the kinds of operations that I was successful in building, and I've been doing that ever since, and I love it. Absolutely love doing what I do.
What is it about business organization that kind of took you in when you started this whole process?
I think, you know, every organization is unique, every industry is unique, but really, at the end of the day, a process is a process is a process, and it's extremely difficult for organizations to get well-oiled processes. Initially, once they learn the model and the way to design them, then it becomes much easier. But it's just taking that first big leap and understanding how to effectively manage a process that can set a business, you know, far apart from its competition.
Now, no doubt that you have kind of a template of how businesses should run. I mean, obviously, you've been doing this for 20 years, so you have a track record of success. Give us kind of a breakdown of how you analyze a business that is in chaos. Basically, you're trying to eliminate chaos. Well, what are 3 to 5 steps that you immediately identify in order to take the chaos out of the business?
Well, I think the first thing I look at is, you know, how are they financially positioned? And in the case of a government or a not-for-profit agency, how are they doing in terms of having margin left at the end of the day to reinvest in the organization? And so, you know, start just looking at, from a financial perspective, you know, how are they doing? And then I go quickly to customers and how customers are responding to the organization and, you know, what, you know, are customers leaving or are they flocking to the company? You know, where are they, and what are some of the beefs that the customers had?
All right.
Complaining about.
All right. So you start the finances. Do you, and then customers? Do you find that business owners are very guarded about their financials?
Well, I don't actually look at the books.
It's okay.
General questions I ask about, you know, how much there is at the end of the day when they take, you know, sales minus their expenses. So I don't really get into looking at the actual numbers.
You mentioned customers. If they're going away or if they're coming in, how do you determine where they are in the process?
Well, you know, one of the reasons why I ask that question is to find out what degree of clarity the business owner or the leadership team has around the customer, the voice of the customer. And very often, if it's a small business, they're usually fairly connected with customers. The larger the business gets, the harder it is to stay connected, and the more they rely on surveys and data, which is not a good indicator of how customers actually feel.
Once you go over financial or general financial questions, customers, what's the next thing you look at?
Then the next thing's processes, and how are the processes actually designed? So the first thing I do is I ask to see a copy of their documented processes. And almost always, I get a blank stare. Yeah. And so, you know, that's where we begin. We begin with, okay, let's look at what are your key processes. How are they operating? How do they need to operate? And let's, you know, get at least the first couple of major processes documented and improved so we can start from there.
Now, do you notice that people, I mean, other than being shocked that people haven't written down their processes, do they resent having to write down what they do? Or do business owners find efficiencies going, oh, man, I didn't know that. Why do we do that?
Yeah, definitely. You know, again, a lot of what I do is really heightening the awareness and bringing clarity to how the business is actually running. So sometimes I'm not delivering very good news. that's difficult. But, you know, wouldn't you rather know the truth about how things are versus, you know, being a little bit delusional about how you think they are and operating in a bit of a fog? So, no, I don't find that there's a lot of concern because they generally don't bring me in if they're not willing to kind of be an open book.
Now, do you do the ISO standards or is it ISO? I'm not sure if I know quite how to say that.
Yeah, ISO 9000. No, I don't. You know, I have many, many clients that are ISO 9000 certified, but I personally don't participate in preparing them for ISO 9000. There are specialists out there that do that.
All right. So after finances, customers, and processes, what's the next thing you look at?
The last thing, and the most important thing, actually, is the level of employee engagement in the business.
Mm.
And, you know, this is everything from, you know, how happy they are to come to work every day to what exactly they're doing when they are there for that 8+ hours a day.
When you have to deliver this news to the business owners, are they a little bit shocked with employee engagement, meaning they think that the employers are happier than they really are?
Yes.
Or employees, excuse me.
Yes, yes. They are often shocked. And, you know, part of what I do is, you know, being a scientist, you use hard data when you can get it, and you also use a lot of anecdotal data. And I have a little radar that is on my head that takes in data in so many different ways. I mean, it's everything from body language and capturing the, you know, I'll use a California term here for a minute, the vibe of a place.
Mm-hmm.
When I walk in, I feel and I sense what the organization is like before I even talk with people. And then when I start talking with people and ask them questions, of course, I get, you know, some better anecdotal data. And then one of the things I do is I just listen a lot. I listen in hallways, in the restroom, in the, if there's a place to eat and people are eating, you know, I'm eavesdropping to the degree I can to, you know, to hear what are they talking about. It's a big indicator on what's going on in the company.
So the vibe, like you said, to use your words, it's the vibe of the company, the social part of the business.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I think that's so powerful about engagement is, I mean, you talk a lot of people, are my employees satisfied, or are they happy? And then you're talking about there might be a difference between being engaged and being satisfied at work. What would you say are the two differences there, or is there just a fine line?
No, I actually think it's a pretty dramatic line. I think satisfied is this, you know, kind of, I don't know, middle of the road, possibly an average kind of feeling where, yeah, you know, I'm satisfied with my job. I can come in and do it during the day, and I can go home, and I'm not miserable. That's very different from being extremely active and excited by and involved with your job and willing to take the extra effort and wanting to be engaged in solving problems. You know, problem solving is a high. It's a big high. Dealing with existing problems that never go away, that is what drains people and saps the life force out of them. And so engagement is really about getting everyone engaged with solving problems and making continuous improvement. And that's what organizations don't do a very good job at, to be frank.
No, I would agree with that.
And that's part of what, I think that's one of the most difficult leaps for any business owner, especially small business owners that really designed the business from the ground up themselves and have, you know, a high sense of ownership on how work is done because they built it. But you know, once you get to a certain level, a business owner has to step out of the way, has to develop their workforce to be doing that kind of thinking and work for them, and that's also what happens to, you know, fully engage them and build the confidence level and the excitement level of the entire workforce, which then, of course, propels the business forward. So that's ultimately what you have to do in order to be successful.
One of the things that when I first opened up the book, there was a quote there by Larry Bird, and just awesome. It says, "First, master the fundamentals." And if you knew Larry Bird, he was always out there before the game began, shooting really close to the basket. He knew the fundamentals were big. He dribbled the ball around the whole court. He knew where the dead spots were. He knew every fundamental about this court.
He played in the Boston Garden. That was notorious for having dead spots in the floor, too.
Yeah. So these fundamentals, why do you think it's so tough for organizations who have been successful? I mean, you meet with the business owner. Why is it so difficult for them to focus on these easy fundamental things versus it seems like they always want to get ahead of themselves?
Yeah, you know, it's just such an issue, and it's human nature to a large degree. You know, if you look at how people behave outside of business even, the fundamentals are often kind of left unmanaged and people don't pay close enough attention to them in terms of our own diets and, you know, how we spend our time and all kinds of things. So in a business level, I think what happens is businesses work very, very fast. And when things are coming out of business at the speed that they are typically coming out of business, it's very difficult to take a collective deep breath and pay attention to some of the basics. So you're always trying to, like, you know, move without building that strong foundation. And so what happens is you get all these cracks in the foundation of a company, and then the more they try to build on those cracks, the more likely it is their, you know, skyscraper is going to topple over. And so, you know, the book, the whole reason why I wrote the book was to help companies find a way to repair those cracks and rethink their foundation and rebuild their foundation so that they can build a much stronger structure on top of it.
What are the basics that every business needs to go to? I guess it depends on the business, but is there kind of a wide-ranging set of basics that every business needs to have?
Yes. So the cracks are caused by chaos. And I found that there are four different behaviors in an organization that help repair those cracks and start reducing and ultimately, hopefully, eliminating the internally produced chaos. So I'm talking about self-inflicted chaos,
okay,
not chaos that comes from the marketplace or, you know, changing regulations. This is stuff that companies are doing to themselves and have total power to fix themselves. So that is having extremely good clarity in everything you do. Focusing on fewer projects at any given time and focusing on priorities. Discipline, so having a disciplined approach toward managing processes and solving problems. And then with all three of those, what you get, if the employees are actively engaged in all of that work, is a highly engaged workforce to help, you know, propel the business ahead. So it's clarity, focus, discipline, and engagement. Building those behaviors and replacing the dysfunctional behaviors with those behaviors is what repairs those cracks and builds a solid foundation.
That seems pretty, you know, very straightforward. Clarity, focus, discipline in the approach of processes, highly engaged. I know it's not simple, but what, I mean, those seem pretty straightforward, but what are the, you know, what would you say is one challenge of people trying to implement those four things?
Yeah, you know, it does seem simple, doesn't it? And yet, you know, it's rarely done well. I mean, when you look at the number of outstanding organizations that are out there that are truly outstanding, there aren't many. And it's just like, you know, why are there not any more, you know, stellar athletes than there are, or musicians or artists? It, you know, those are fundamental behaviors for any endeavor where you seek excellence and you want to achieve excellence. So, for example, clarity. You know, one of the things with clarity that gets in a business's way is the lack of truth-telling. And I don't mean overt lying, but I mean, you know, not necessarily having everyone understand the clear, unvarnished truth about what's going on, and breaking the behaviors of feeling like you need to shield people out of a fear position is an important behavior to break.
Where's that fine line between telling them, hey, listen, you know, we're in trouble, or we're experiencing a financial turbulence, because you don't want to alarm them and then have everyone hit the emergency hatch and then you're really in trouble. Is there a fine line between just giving them the truth?
Yeah, good question. Obviously, you do have to make sure that you can maintain your workforce.
Yeah.
If you're in a difficult situation, or you'll never get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I do believe there's a way to not necessarily show them the numbers, but to make it very clear that you need their help. Now, here's the other thing. People will take bad news really, really well if they're actively engaged in solving the problem. So if you tell people that the financials are a mess and that, you know, this is a dire situation, and then you expect them to just trust leadership that they're going to fix it, that's probably not a good place to be.
Have you seen that before?
Yeah, absolutely. And on the other hand, if you are able to say to them, hey, you know, we are having a tough time, we have to find a way to reduce expenses, let's take a look around at how we're really spending our time and our money, and let's work on this together, and they're very engaged in it, then that's when the business can actually make some progress and have a much more loyal workforce as a result of that.
And once again, that engagement is so important, like you've mentioned, you know, throughout this interview, getting those employees actually actively participating, like you said, in solving those problems. And hey, it's my ideas, hey, we can do this, let's work together.
Well, there's a lot of pride in having your own ideas too, and then they're implemented to solve a problem. I would think that would be a great source of
satisfaction
not only for the employee, but also for the business, going, man, we really do have a pretty talented workforce here.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that Toyota has taught us, and they've been one of the, you know, wonderful, outstanding organizations to study, is, you know, they have this very strong philosophical foundation behind everything they do that's about respect for people.
Mm-hmm.
And we often think that respect is about how we treat people, how we talk with them, and all of that. And it is that, but it's so much more. It's about respecting the creative potential of every person and providing an opportunity for them to, you know, fully leverage that and be actively engaged in being creative day in and day out, which is a human need. And it's also about respecting them in terms of their ability to handle the truth and not shielding them from the truth. So it's very important to do, and it's something that business owners often don't do well.
You know, that is such an important insight, I think, that you just shared, because so many times it's just, hey, I talk to them nice, I let them say their ideas, and, you know,
and then we don't do it.
You know, and I give them a pat on the back, or I write that note, and really it is letting them actually do their job, give them
right.
Some ownership, and let them be creative, let them solve that problem. I think that's an important insight to, you know, to put a big exclamation point during this interview, because I think that's one of the elements of the secret sauce of an outstanding organization.
That's funny you say that. You know what my original title was for the book?
No.
The Secret Sauce?
Secret Sauce. Yeah, and every publisher and literary agent I talked with early on said, no, that's not going to be the title.
Yeah, I was just going to say, The Secret Sauce, is that about barbecues?
This time of year it is.
Yeah, I guess it would be. You mentioned that business owners or managers, what they should do is not necessarily what they do. They're more reactionary than steering the ship. Is there anything that business owners or managers should do so they can better adjust to the people that they manage, their strengths?
Yeah. So the first thing I would recommend is that every business owner, in a very small business especially, and every manager as the business gets bigger, has to be able to have a significant amount of bandwidth, as I call it, or time available to be in the strategic realm of what's going on. What planning ahead, looking around, figuring out strategies, being the visionary. So they have to find a way to develop that workforce to delegate all the day-to-day, not minutia by any means, but the day-to-day grunt work of managing the business needs to be delegated to the workforce. And that will give the leadership team the space and the time they need to be able to look ahead. When it comes to managing the employees, it's important that every manager is, during the interview process, assessing what that employee is capable of doing and making sure that there's a good job fit. That's important.
Sure.
And then once they get in there on the job, then, right from day one, helping the employee feel safe making suggestions and actually carrying these suggestions forward and not just having it be, hey, I have a great idea. The boss says, let me hear it, and then nothing ever happens.
I've always maintained that the CEO or the owner or whoever is managing the company needs to be out in front of the employees to, whatever extent possible, kind of steering the ship. Do people need that leadership keep the company moving forward?
Yes. I think, again, get back to clarity, this is where the leader has the opportunity to shine the most, is being extremely clear about where the organization is heading. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking necessarily a five-year plan. In fact, I'm not sure that five-year plans make sense anymore.
Yeah, not anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm talking about, for the next 6 months to a year, here is where we're going, and this is what's important, and then sticking with that and not having, not being guilty of organizational ADD.
Yes, you had mentioned that in the book. I wanted to, after you've finished that point, it'd be great to learn, talk about that.
Go ahead, because I think organizational ADD is a significant problem.
I think you even named it organizational attention
deficit disorder. No, what is that?
Well, so this is when leaders or managers have, 9 million things they want to accomplish, and they jump from one to one, and they move people around, and they say, hey, Sally, do this. Oh, no, Sally, do that. No, Bill, you do that. And there's just all this is, again, chaos. It's by not sticking with a plan. So right now in the literature, one of the things I'm intrigued with is there's a bit of an anti-plan zeitgeist going on out there. And I think people are misinterpreting what a plan should be versus what it, is. A plan should be a flexible, adjustable document, or, even if it's not written down, which it should be. It's something that you can adapt quickly to changing conditions. It's not something where you set it in stone and no matter what is happening, you stick to your guns and you stay forward. But I find organizations do the opposite, where they don't even have a plan. They don't even have a direction. So every single new twist or change to the environment moves them in a new direction, and they never get where they're wanting to go because they're not focused on going there.
They're kind of spinning their wheels in the mud instead of moving forward. I mean, I remember that show Up where they say squirrel to the dog, and the dog goes and runs after the squirrel for a little bit, and they say squirrel again, and it runs over there. So, I guess this disorder is to not run after the squirrel.
So what you're saying is that there's a difference between being busy and actually moving forward.
Absolutely. That's a great way to put it. Yes. That's good.
We're talking with Karen Martin, the author of The Outstanding Organization, Generate Business Results by Eliminating Chaos and Building the Foundation for Everyday Excellence. As we start to wrap up here, we wanted to close with a couple things.
I think the last point, I was just, when you said it as one of the four things that helps eliminate chaos, was focus on fewer things to do and prioritize those. So I really agree with that. Maybe you can shed some insights into what you've seen out there and organizations trying to maybe accomplish too much instead of just doing the few most important things that would actually drive value.
Yeah, so if you look at any given time period, let's just say a year, and if there are, let's say, 40 different things on a to-do list that have to get accomplished, what many organizations do is they'll start, maybe 15 of them at once and try to move forward. In reality, if they start with fewer things at a time, they will accomplish more in a given time period because they don't have this extra time and effort, the kind of work that has to be done when you're switching back and forth called switch tasking, which adds sometimes up to 20% additional time. So a sporting goods manufacturer, for example, was able to complete 73 projects in a year as compared to 24 previously just by sticking with fewer at a given time,
wow,
wrapping them up and moving on.
So multitasking is not necessarily a good thing.
Well, actually, the research is showing now there's no such thing as multitasking with cognitive skills.
You know what? I'm finding something in me that is kind of interesting. Rather than jump from project to project, I find myself focusing in on one just to get it done so I don't have to come back and revisit it. And
good.
I'm finding that things are coming off my to-do list much more quickly than jumping between all of them.
Exactly, and that's great that you've experienced that, because that means you're doing less switch tasking, going back and forth, and the mental ramp up you have to go through when you start a new project that you've left, 3 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
You have to get caught up, and it takes that additional time. So just wrapping one project at a time or three at a time versus 10 at a time is much more effective and much more efficient.
Perk. I guess maybe the last question we have for you. If you could give any advice to the small business owners out there who are really making, the American dream come to life, what would be maybe just the best advice you would give them from all your great experience with, talking with Fortune 500 companies and other companies throughout the U.S.?
I think of all of them, clarity still trumps everything else. I think getting extremely clear about who you are, who you want to be, and how you're going to get there, and taking and not rushing into decisions until you get clarity, I think is really important. And it's not necessarily in human nature to take that time to really think through and get clarity first. But I believe that all success, no matter if it's in business or any other endeavor, comes from high degrees of clarity first.
Do you think that CEOs unintentionally cocoon themselves from the rest of the business?
Oh, yeah. Not everyone does, but I think the propensity is to stay in your office. And, another wonderful thing we've learned from Toyota is the power of going to the Gemba, G-E-M-B-A, going to where the work is being done. And all my clients, when I take senior leaders through a process where I get them out of their offices on a very regular basis, and this is different from the old management by walking around,
mm-hmm,
it's very carefully constructed going out to the workplace and talking with the employees and with very specific goals in mind. And they love it. I mean, once they finally get used to it and they get over their fear of being out there and seeming like they don't have answers, which, no leader has to have all the answers, but yet they think they do. Once it gets over that, the employees love it, the leaders love it, and there's such a greater degree of clarity around how the business is really operating, which then leads to better decisions as a leader.
If you boil everything away, clarity, letting people be engaged in the process, and steering the ship.
Yep.
So everyone's going the same direction.
Yes, very important. Same direction.
Is there anything else that you want to bring up that we have not covered?
Well, I guess just wrapping it all the way back to the beginning, I think the last thing that is important is back to that process documentation. If you don't know how you operate at a fairly granular level, it's going to be very difficult to ever solve problems effectively and make improvement. And so I think that, every person listening right now should pick, say their top five processes. How do they actually deliver value to a customer? And start mapping those processes and look at it step one, step two. Where are the handoffs? Who's telling whom to do what, when, and how? and get very, very clear on how work is done. In that process, you'll see waste. You can eliminate it and then have a better process as a result, and then continuing to manage the process by having some key indicators that tell you whether you're on target or not. That is key. And so just take the top five. You know, take maybe 3 months to do it if it's going to take that long, you know, for you to get all five of them mapped, and then see how different it is managing the business once you have things documented and you've got a great learning tool for new hires and that type of thing.
So you take the chaos out of it by inserting a process, and by inserting the process, you get better results.
Absolutely. You want predictability in a business.
Predictability. That's the better word. Yeah.
Right. As much as you can, you want predictability so you can make better decisions.
All right. That is the voice and author of Karen Martin, the author of The Outstanding Organization, Generate Business Results by Eliminating Chaos and Building the Foundation for Everyday Excellence. Where do people pick up the book, Karen?
It's available through every major bookseller, and it's available both in hard copy and Kindle. So, you know, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, 800 CEO Read, you know, all of those booksellers now have it available.
And people can also visit your website. I believe it's ksmartin.com.
Right, ksmartin.com, www.ksmartin.com.
Karen Martin, our guest, right here on the Entrepreneur Addiction Podcast. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Patrick and Burke. Thank you very much for having me.
We'll go ahead and wrap it up there. So for Karen Martin, go ahead and pick up her book. We've just had a string of podcasts, you know, as I mentioned at the very beginning, of just killer authors, and Karen is no different.
Yeah, this book, I mean, I picked it up. Started reading it, and you know, it was an awesome read. Finished it, I was excited, and now here we are. So yeah, I definitely recommend the book. It's powerful for any business owner or CEO out there.
So for Karen Martin, the author of The Outstanding Organization, Burke Alder, the VP of Marketing at Lendio.com, my name is Patrick Wiskin. Be sure to tell your friends who are business owners to subscribe to the podcast, and you can also stream the podcast on Lendio.com/blog. You can also pick it up on my website, PatrickWiskombe.com, last name spelled WISCOMBE. It's PatrickWiskombe.com. So for Karen, Burke, I'm Patrick. Talk to you next week. See ya.
Making business loans simple. This has been the Entrepreneur Addiction Podcast, helping you secure the capital you need with your hosts, Brock Blake, Dan Bischoff, and Patrick Wiskombe. Heard exclusively on Lendio.com.